Ms.
Miss.
That's what I prefer. M.S.
Yeah, not spoil your chances there. Call you Miss. Alice Nomcebo.
Yes, I prefer Nomcebo. Not the other one.
I think the panel is listening.
Yes.
Okay. I think the panel is listening. Ma'am, my name is maybe. Let's do introduction before I talk to you. My name is Mondli Kungubele, chairing the panel for the interview.
Good morning, my name is Marian Shekile and I'm the co-chair.
Good morning, my name is Dikgang Stok. I'm a member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bridget Masango. I'm the member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development in this committee.
Good morning, lady. I'm Letitia Aris. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Lamini. I'm Dalmain Christians. I'm also a member of this committee.
Morning. My name is Audra Malik. I'm a member of the subcommittee.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Nomcebo, that's how you are asking us to call you. Because you want your own name, not your family name. All right. We want to welcome you for joining us to this conversation we're going to have with you regarding what you can offer in this position, having selected you based on your CV. We request you to relax, stay calm, feel free to answer your question in the manner you prefer, you deem it best, as long as you hear what you say. Yeah, don't panic. The little thing I want to advise is that we don't expect you to Google any answers.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the only thing. Is that okay, honorable members? Yes. You can't Google answers. It's like we're interviewing you virtually and you're sitting at home and you realize that we're asking a particular question, you go to your shelf and pull it. As long as you don't Google, we are fine with you. I think that's the only thing we wanted to raise with you. Now, we are going to start. They have asked me, I'll be the first to ask you questions. My question are for easing you off, but you must take each question very serious. If you can tell us a bit about yourself. Two, why are you interested in sharing your time serving state in this board, and what are you bringing in? We've got 3 minutes conversation, me and you, on this. I've already taken my 5 seconds. It means 2 minutes, 55 seconds is yours. Proceed.
Morning, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me for this interview. I am Nomcebo Dlamini. I'm the last born child of six children, born to a Xhosa lady and a Swazi man. They lived in Johannesburg, Zola, for the better part of their marriage, and then they left for Swaziland in the, I'm told, 1969, because I was born in the early 70s. I don't want to specify when exactly. My parents are passed now, they are late, and two of my older siblings, as you can imagine, they were much, much older than I was. And I was educated in Swaziland. I obtained a BA law degree there, and then I moved back to South Africa, and some of my siblings are back here as well. And I got a project management qualification through UNISA and a change management qualification through the University of Pretoria, as well as management BBBE certification from UNISA as well. I am a director at Find Your Fire. Find Your Fire is a youth development organization, an NPO which I started working at in 2011. And then I moved to the main company, which was the mother body of Zanenza, of Find Your Fire, which is Zanenza Holdings. And when I moved, I was nominated to be a director for Find Your Fire. Find Your Fire is youth development strictly. It just focuses on all things youth related. I am a member of a church. I've been in leadership in church bodies all my life, from the time I was 15. I was a member of the DYC, which is the Anglican Diocesan Youth Council, and we were very much involved in youth issues, drug abuse, sex issues, all sorts of things that pertain to young people. I'm currently involved in my church as well in terms of drug abuse issues. Lately, there's been sort of like a spike. We have even gone to the extent of having to bring in a psychologist to come and talk to our younger people, our teens, preteens, because we noticed that as a church that we seem to have more and more of that problem occurring, and parents are talking more about it and complaining about it. And you know, as a church, people expect you to be the solver of all their problems. So you have to have solutions. And that's why we decided to bring in a psychologist. Why I want to do this? I want to do this because one of the things my mother told me was, when she was still alive, that you need to have impact in life. You don't just live. You need to do something. I've raised two of my children. They are over 21 now, 21 and 23. And I believe, God willing, I've done a great job, because both of them are quite responsible adults. One of them is actually working here in Cape Town after finishing a degree at UCT. And because of that, I felt like I am actually able to contribute something, you know, and I do want to have some kind of impact. And what I bring, the project management experience, the youth awareness. I'm very aware of young people's issues, especially having raised two kids, and a girl and a boy, with very, very different things.
Even a nice song does get stopped. Thank you very much. 2.1.
Thank you. It's me. The Central Drug Authority was established by an Act of Parliament. Lady, can you, which act is that, and what does that act seek to achieve?
The act is
just to, you've got a conversation of 5 minutes with on that matter.
Okay. The act is the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act 70 of 2008, and it mandates the CDA to coordinate the country's response to drug issues, all sorts of drug issues. The CDA is supposed to bring about the national strategy, and it's supposed to make sure that there's a review every 5 years of the national development, national drug management plan. And the current plan, I believe, is the fourth edition, if I'm not mistaken, and the previous plans, I have not been able to see if they've actually been effective, but I don't think there has been much that's happening with the CDA. And I noticed as well that there isn't much online in terms of, the chairperson mentioned that we don't Google, but in order for us to know what exactly this organization is doing, we need to have an online presence, especially now. And that is something that I noticed is not there. And I believe in order to us to be able to have any kind of impact, especially these days, you need to have an online presence. And so that's what I, that's the act.
Okay. Next question is, I think the 2.2.
Thank you. Lady, in your own words, in your own assessment, do you think that the CDA performs its mandate effectively? If yes, how so? And if not, what are the shortcomings? So tell us, what do you think? What is the shortcomings, and what is your assessment of the CDA and its role. I don't think the mandate has been performed well over the years, and one of the things that I've just mentioned is that there isn't much that is known about the CDA out there, you know, including with me. I've been dealing with young people and issues of drugs, but the one thing that I've always known is drug rehabilitation centers, and that's sort of it, and the Department of Social Development, without a clarity on the CDA itself. And the other thing that I realized is there wasn't an annual report, which is something that is supposed to be produced. And that's something that, as a board, I believe you are supposed to make sure that it comes about, whatever happens. There's timelines that you have to make sure that you comply with, and you make sure that that annual report is produced so that people know exactly what this organization is. This is a statutory body. How can it not have something that basic? And I believe if the board is not effective, as I don't think it has been, there's issues then of governance, because if you're not a board that's operating well, then how exactly are you doing that? And an organization will not be able to perform properly and do what it's supposed to do if it doesn't have proper governance structures, it doesn't have KPIs, it doesn't have reporting. And even as a committee, how do you assess if that board is actually performing or not, and if it's actually meeting whatever goals that it has to meet? Okay, sorry. You can also highlight for us both the regards in terms of the mandate, as well as ensuring compliance, accountability and monitoring, development and implementation of the departmental drug master plan. That is in terms of compliance, accountability and monitoring of the drug master plan by national department and the provincial drug master plans. So how are you proposing to address these shortcomings? Yes, Chair.
The shortcomings that I've just mentioned in terms of governance and... Okay. The CDA has to have subcommittees. I think that's one of the first things. I've served on previous boards where there's been subcommittees which made sure that these things are happening. And I served on a social and ethics committee as well as a chair. So that needs to be done. It's not even optional. And if it does not exist, then you have a problem. And with my project management experience, monitoring and evaluation of anything that you do is extremely important. And from looking at the current NDMP 2019-2024, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and the committee, CDA, needs to just run, because now you've got just about, 3 years to 5 years, if you're looking at the time that has been lost through COVID. And if you do not have clear and clean KPIs, you're not going to be able to do that. And if you don't get the departments to actually come on board, because from what I gathered through my research, there has been a laxity in terms of the government departments and the provincial departments coming on board. So what is very, very important is that the CDA will have to maybe take it upon themselves to literally just go to these places. If there's a province that does not do what they're supposed to do, then that means you have to go and speak to the provincial premier or whoever is in charge of that department and own this. Because one of the things that I've discovered is if you don't own anything and you're expecting it to run on its own, it's not going to happen. And maybe in the project management space, that's the one thing that I've discovered, that if you let go of your foot off the pedal, it's not going to move. And it may seem like you are sort of like a control freak, and I've been said to be one of those, and it's fine, I agree. And maybe I always feel like until I know myself that this is done, I really have issues trusting that what you're saying is true. And maybe another thing that could happen in terms of the annual reports, for instance, is instead of waiting to the very end, why don't you ask for these reports maybe quarterly? And as you get them quarterly, then at least you, even at the most, you'll have 3/4 of the year, you know, if, for instance, you fail to get the last quarter. But if you're going to wait till right at the end and then you expect these departments, which have previously shown that they're not really interested in doing this, if you wait for the very end, you might not be able to do that annual report. And for as long as this continues, then the CDA might be said to, why does it even exist if it's not able to do the just the basic? I do think that maybe the positioning of the CDA is not necessarily good, and I'm not even sure if there's a secretariat and where it sits. You know, the CDA reports to the minister, but it would seem like in the big DSD, it's just a tiny little part over there, whereas its responsibilities are quite huge, especially right now. We're dealing with a serious issue of drug abuse and substance abuse in this country. And we cannot have an entity or a statutory body like the CDA being just like one of the tick box things that we do. And at the moment, that's what it looks like it is.
Do you think that the Act is covering all aspects, or do you think that there are certain aspects that the Act is silent on?
I think there is a bit of like the very big gaps. Yeah. For instance, if the CDA had maybe the same powers as the NDA type thing, or maybe even SANAC, that would work. And I think where it sits right now and how it's mandated may not necessarily provide the greatest platform for it to perform efficiently.
Ms. Lamini, if you are appointed as a board member of the CDA, you will be expected to implement the mandate of the authority. So if you could please share with the panel your understanding of the objectives of the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 and how you believe CDA should achieve those objectives.
My understanding is that, first of all, there's been a shift, a focus shift from the punitive approach in terms of drug rehabilitation to an understanding that this is actually a health problem, and the brain has been messed up by the use of substances, and it doesn't really help to say once a person is now an addict or has had their brain functions impaired, you are now punishing them. It doesn't help. You can talk about threatening young people, as we do. I've also done it before, telling them all the ills and whatever of drugs before they start. But once a person is addicted, once a person has actually got a substance abuse problem, it really does not help to do it that way. And I'm actually glad that even the UN and the AU and all the other bodies that are connected with this and concerned with it are all realizing that we need to change the way that we do things. I would say in terms of implementation, sorry, that was the second question. I believe the first is to sort out the issue of just the governance. We need to sort that out. And yeah, that's the first thing. That let's just sort out. Okay, we sort out the board, and once that has been sorted, where is the CDA reporting? How is it funded? Because I think that's another issue. And is it getting funding from the National Treasury, or is it what's happening right now? Just a little bit of money, you know, from the department, which I don't think is working very well. And making sure that young people as well are involved. You know, there's something to be said about us as the older generation making decisions for young people without consulting them. There's a major, major problem there, because we come up with solutions that just don't work, and we do not have a clear understanding of their problems, and because of that, then even the things that we are trying to do, they fail. You know, because we are trying to assist them, but the processes that we're using are maybe outdated sometimes, and because we do not understand fully the problems on the ground, we just continue to fail. And then as a country, we are seen not to be implementing. You know, one of the things that we have said about us is that we've got these beautiful and marvelous projects and programs, but we just fail to implement. And for as long as we don't have certain things in place, we are not going to be able to implement. And I would say, in order for it to happen, we truly need to do a lot of consultation, stakeholder engagement, and even the departmental people that we use, the officials, they need to have an understanding of the importance of this and how it also affects their own delivery on other matters, because maybe the other problem is they do not understand fully that if they do not do what they are supposed to do as a department in terms of bringing in the reports and in terms of bringing in the data that is necessary to be able to compile all these programs that we need, then they are also failing. And if there's KPIs that are connected to that in their own spaces, little spaces wherever they are sitting, then we might just be able to succeed. But for as long as it seems like it's just the CDA's problem sitting over there in Cape Town or wherever, and it doesn't affect me in any way, then I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing and ticking my boxes, and it really doesn't matter. And at the end of the day, the NDMP 2019-2024, after in 2023, we realize it still has not been affected and we have not done anything.
So there are a whole lot of departments that are part of achieving the objectives of the NDMP, National Drug Master Plan. And how would you, as a member of the board of the CDA, ensure that all those departments do what they have to do for the achievement of the objective?
I would, as I said, I think walking into people's offices, I know that it sounds like it's a lot of work, but I think initially maybe that's what would need to happen, to make people understand, the officials themselves, talking to the HODs, talking to the DDGs to say that this is what is happening, this thing needs to be done. It's not even an option anymore. And maybe that would be the first, but besides sending emails, because I know that we usually just push emails and we hope that those emails are going to convince people. So maybe at times what I found in my space works best is just picking up the phone and saying, sorry, so you know, this is what I'm doing and this is the intention. And when people, you engage them like that, even the DDGs and the HODs, I found that in some instances they actually really come on board instead of just seeing an email coming through that makes absolutely no sense to them. And that way making them understand on a personal level. You know, the other thing that I find is when people have a direct link to whatever the problem is, they understand better. And a lot of the DDGs and the HODs, I was actually thinking about this, they probably have children around my kids' age. My kids are 21 and 23 now. They probably have children that are maybe at that stage. So if you make them understand that, you know, if you just bring it, make it personal. You know, people react much better to that. But maybe what we have done before is just go on the official, this is what you're supposed to do, and we leave it at that, and we just don't bring it to the person to say, hey, do you know, when you start having conversations. And usually those conversations, they do bear fruit.
Thank you. You've got 2 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. All right, proceed if you are.
Chair, you're taking my time. You mentioned earlier on that as this more senior generation, we leave the youth out of what we're trying to do for them. How would you do what you are saying? How would you make the youth central to the work of the CDA?
The company that I am consulting in now, I don't want to say I work full-time because I don't, Zanenza Holdings, is a communications agency. One of the things that we do is communications, and we've done work with SoCity for the Gauteng Department of Gauteng Province, actually, their drug abuse campaign of 2016. And what I would say is we need a serious communications campaign, first of all. Make young people aware, first, that it is no longer a punishable or punitive. Well, that's not how we're approaching it. We're not approaching this punitively anymore. We understand that now you as a young person have a brain issue. So that's the first thing that I would say we do. We do that communications, really, really go out and communicate and make people aware. And then also, stop them from being so scared of coming out, because that's another problem that happens. A lot of young people that are involved in drugs, it takes them a very long time. You know, in my interactions with them, especially in the church, I have found that you've got young girls that are involved in prostitution in the church, and they're actually also using drugs. And then you will see them one time and like, you know, this seems to be a problem, but the person will not easily say that this is a problem simply because they feel like there's shame. I cannot tell you this because it's something that I'm keeping hidden. And for as long as that is happening, and for as long as people think that I have moral failure, then it's a problem.
I remember in Gwisi. Thank you, Mr. Next question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is very sweet and simple. And number four. Can I continue?
Yeah.
What is your understanding of good governance, including its main features, and how do you ensure good governance in the CDA?
Good governance is basically just being accountable. First, being accountable to the authority that has appointed you, whoever that is. And there's certain rules and policies that you have to make sure that you adhere to. You have to make sure that there's proper financial management and processes are in place to do that. You have to make sure that the committees, for instance, for a statutory body like the CDA, I would expect that there would be certain committees that need to be in place. They are there, they are fully capacitated, and the people.
Yes, Chair, we are. It's just that I didn't realize that I still needed to ask 3.2.
Thank you, Chair.
I was saying the committees, the subcommittees are very, very important. Financial management, I think I mentioned that. And then the reporting, monitoring and evaluation, and the reporting, and the KPIs. Oh, yeah, that's very, very important. There has to be KPIs. If that does not exist, we have a problem. Because then what are we measuring and using what? You know, like, well, then what are we doing? It's like we're just sitting around talking every day, and when the CDA meets, it's an expense to the public purse. And what exactly have we come out with? So I would say that those are the things that I consider very important. And also ethical behavior. As I mentioned, that I've been chair of the Social and Ethics Committee before, and I have found that that's one of the committees that is sort of not seen as so important. And in a society where you've got lots of issues with corruption and stuff like that, you really need to have your handle on that and have it very, very well and very strong. And I believe that I am said to be quite pedantic with certain things and sort of like an irritation at times, but I believe that that's the one way of getting things done. If you don't do it like that, people are just going to decide that, no, it's not so important to make sure that they do certain things. And as a board, that is critical.
Thank you, Chair, and please accept my apology for that. Prior to the review of the National Drug Master Plan 2013 to 2017, a need to conduct an evaluation was prioritized to assess how it was implemented. Subsequently, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation commissioned an implementation evaluation of the NDMP 2013-2017 as part of the National Evaluation System in partnership with the Department of Social Development. This evaluation took place between August 2015 and January 2016. So the question is, what were the key findings of the recommendations of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017 implementation evaluation?
The one that just always pops in my mind is there was no implementation plan, and there's no implementation plan for what needed to happen, and that's what I gathered from my research, and it was not directed at the departmental strategic and annual plans, which is another problem, because if you don't do it that way, then you are going to have a haphazard thing, and it lacked a balanced approach. And it did not provide clarity on the broader strategy of demand harm and supply reduction. Those are the things that I can just remember right now from that. And in terms of the answers to how we deal with that, One, first, let's have an implementation plan. That's almost like, let's have an implementation plan. And if we have an implementation plan and make sure that we are aligned with the various departments, then we're going to crack this. If we don't have that as off the bat, then we have a problem. And we also need to have some kind of a risk mitigation plan, I believe. We need to have a communications plan. As I'm big on communications, I'm sure you have figured that one out. I think we need to do that. Communications plan, how do we do this? We have the communications plan has to include some kind of a media or social media plan so that we are able to reach the young people that we are supposed to reach. And maybe also the recommendation that I would have would be to have CDA maybe sitting closer to some higher authority. I'm not sure if where it's positioned right now, the ministers, this DSD, I'm not entirely sure if that's exactly where it's supposed to be.
Thank you very much for that question. Question five.
Thank you, Chairperson. Nomcebo, what are the key issues affecting young people, families, and communities regarding substance abuse? How would you advise the government to deal with these issues?
That's probably something that I'm very familiar with. First is the issue of unemployment. One of the things that El Sanyo Fire has always done, and since 2009 when the organization was formed by the CEO of Zanenza, was to assist young people to find opportunities of employment, because that's a major problem in this country. And so that would be one. It's inequality, and then it's poverty. So those are the big three in this country. And I think for every vulnerable community and a lot of communities in South Africa, that's just basically what they are dealing with. And on top of that, I think soon we're going to have another issue with graduates feeling the need to get into some kind of stress relief thing simply because of the AI revolution. A lot of graduates are sitting at home, and I've actually started noticing that a lot of them are starting to be despondent and feeling like, where is this job that I was supposed to get? And so that's another thing that they're dealing with. The issues of us as the older generation not fully understanding them and their problems and trying to speak down to them and shouting at them instead of just listening and figuring out, okay, so you're depressed. Why are you depressed? Instead of just telling them, get, snap out of it, because that's what we usually do, snap out of it. You don't have problems. You don't have issues. They actually do have issues. They do have problems. They're looking at this world. And right now with the recent COVID issue, a lot of young people are stressed because even the jobs that they have been promised, even the internships, some of them have been pulled back, and we're dealing with issues of depression because they're like, so what am I supposed to do now? This internship I was promised, and suddenly this company doesn't even exist anymore. So what's supposed to happen? So those are the things that young people are dealing with, and in turn, their families are also dealing with the same thing because some families, you find that they were looking up to this young person that they were just about to make it, and just about, our troubles are just about to be over. And then suddenly, boom, there's no job. There's no internship. You know, the internships in South Africa are, for a lot of young people, the first step into the working world. And suddenly, all of them are gone, and they're not there anymore. So I believe that a lot of the issues stem from that. And then there's also the issue of promiscuity. I don't know if I'm saying that properly in terms of... Yeah, if it's the right way to say it. But I want to say it is the right way. Yeah, it's the issue of promiscuity. But a lot of it, I have found, is because there's a need to feel wanted. I don't know how, yeah, there's a need to feel wanted. And if that feeling wanted...
Oh, I forgot to say...
Get that right. In your opinion, what is the state of public rehab centers in the country? Are there any challenges with regard to access to public rehabilitation centers in South Africa? If yes, what are those challenges, and how would you advise the country to address those challenges? First challenge is there aren't enough of them. That's the first one. And I would say there has to be some kind of additions to that. And the capacitation of them, because a lot of the people that work in these facilities are actually not capacitated to deal with the problems of drug abuse. And if we're saying the new plan is the NDP 2019 to 2024 is based on understanding that this is a health problem, this is a brain and a nervous system problem. Do those people that are there understand that, or they're still stuck in this, this is what we do, and we are just going to continue doing that? There's training that's needed for them, not necessarily to have them fired en masse, but training needs to happen. They need to understand that this is now the new approach. And then also I think there's been a shift to appointing young people that are not exactly experienced in dealing with this, because I've seen it personally when taking somebody there, that this person was so young. I actually felt like, you know, this is, I'm not even sure if she's going to be able to deal with this, especially when the person is psychotic. That's a problem. And at the same time, you find that there's young people that are quite understanding, and because they understand this very well, and maybe they have come from better institutions where they've been taught better, they're able to perform very well. I think the funding is not so great. The private ones are extremely expensive, as in crazy expensive. Even medical aids, they just can't do it, because I think upwards of 30,000 for most. And that's just for, what, a few weeks, 6 weeks? And it's done. And obviously, who can get assisted in 6 weeks? in all honesty. So the time is too little, and they don't have enough time, and maybe there's not enough of them even in those rehabilitation centers to be able to assist. So all those problems, and for as long as that is happening and they do not have enough time to spend dealing with each person and understanding them, and as I said, if we understand it as a health problem, then you need to sit down with somebody and listen to them. And if you've got a long line of 50 people standing in front of you, there's no way you're going to do that, you know, because you need to be able to finish. So we need to capacitate them. We need to make sure that they are trained, they're reskilled. I think they actually need to be reskilled, because for the longest time they've been working in a certain way, and they need to change.
Thank you. We go to 5.3.
Thank you, lady. One of the challenges facing the country is the lack of comprehensive national statistics on the prevalence of substance and drug abuse. How can the CDA play a role in this regard?
I believe that data actually exists already in a lot of departments. It's just a matter of bringing it together. And maybe before we start thinking of major expensive ways of, let's just get the what's already there, you know, and bring it together and make sure that it's collated properly, and we start from there and then we move on. The data is very, very important, because for as long as we don't have the data, then we cannot come up with the best solutions. Because if we don't know what we are facing on the ground, then how do we find solutions for it? And I still go back to the point of knowing exactly what is happening is the best way to deal with this. Even forming the implementation plan without that data is really a waste of resources. Until that data is there, which it actually is there, it exists. Let's just bring it together and make sure that that is our starting point. And who knows, maybe even with the short time that is left in this particular financial year, we might be able to come up with some kind of a report.
Thank you very much, Namkebo. Recently, there's been much debate in the public discourse around the decriminalization of cannabis, marijuana, in South Africa. So I would like to find out, what is your opinion regarding the court judgment regarding the decriminalization of marijuana for personal use? Thanks.
As I indicated before, I was raised in Swaziland. It's known as one of the capitals of marijuana growing, and I know for a fact that a lot of families actually made life happen because of that. My initial reaction to this was no, simply because I have experienced family members that are now hooked on cannabis. And as I continue to think about it, though, and maybe as I continue to listen to the different arguments, I then felt like maybe instead of criminalizing this, it is actually not such a bad idea to decriminalize it. And there's also a lot to be said about the medicinal effects, and for the medicine, it's actually said to help a lot of people, and we need to acknowledge that. As Africans, we have Africans, our grannies talk about using it. They would just grab it from outside, and it helped. So maybe we need to change our thinking and accept that it's something that can be used. And also, I have found that there's also economic benefits in terms of different ways that it can be used for different things besides just smoking it. It can be used to make teas. It can be used to make clothing. And so there's so many other things that can possibly follow from it. Yeah, so basically now I've changed my mind. I think it's not such a bad idea, but we need to be able to make our people know, especially young people, the effects of excessive use and make them aware that this thing actually does change your brain function, and it's a reality, so you need to be responsible. But instead of policing people, I believe it's actually quite important that you give them the information, give them the power to make the decision for themselves, because you can't police everything.
The second question, 6.2.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, lockdown regulations were introduced by the government, which actually led to the ban of the sale of alcohol and tobacco. So I would like to find out from you, how would you advise the country to deal with the sale of alcohol in particular in the future if such a pandemic still persists? Thanks.
I think the first move by the president and the council that he was working with was actually a good one. We have a substance abuse and an alcohol abuse problem in this country, and we need to acknowledge that. So if you're trying to deal with a pandemic that you actually have never seen before and you don't know where this thing is going, making the decision to say, okay, let's cut the alcohol use as we're trying to figure out how we're dealing with this thing. You can imagine the number of people that would have landed in our hospitals if we had had it just like open right at the beginning. And because you don't know, you know, there's one thing that is always said, that the past is a great way to say this shouldn't have been done or this shouldn't have been done. But the people that need to make the decision, make it based on the information that they have at hand. And the information that they had at hand from the experts was that this is actually going to be terrible for us as a country. Okay, now we understand that then there's other things that happened. But before you actually make a decision to take a certain way, you can't know what the repercussions are going to be. And eventually then it was opened up. And first time it was opened up, we all saw exactly what happened. And can you imagine if we had not taken that stance, if the president had not taken that stance in the initials, at the offset, we would have found ourselves in worse trouble than what we did. So I personally felt like it was a good decision. And given the same circumstances and the same non-understanding of this thing that we're dealing with, I probably would continue to make that same decision if it were me. To ban alcohol? No. If we would come across a certain thing that we don't know. My advice going forward is sensitizing people and making them aware of the issues that come from alcohol abuse.
This is how we work. You don't believe it. You thought you were going to stay here for 17 hours. Thank you very much. If you can't do it in 45 minutes, you can't do it in 7 days. Thank you very much. We thank you, Mkhwebo, for the conversation. Very energetic. Any comment or question from your side?
The one thing that I was wondering about is what is happening with the CDA right now? Because I just couldn't find anything.
It is in place, but long exceeded its term, lesser numbers than we require. That's why we are desperately trying to make sure that there's renewal. And we have done it long time ago, but the COVID put everything aside. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Thank you very much.